At PNC Private Bank, we want to know what drives you. We call that your why. Once we understand it, we'll build a personalized wealth plan to help you achieve it. So tell us, what's your why? Copyright 2021, the PNC Financial Services Group, Inc. All rights reserved. PNC Bank, National Association, member FDIC.
This is your tech news briefing for Friday, February 18th. I'm Zoe Thomas for the Wall Street Journal. Last year, the tiny Central American country of El Salvador became a testing ground for what happens when a sovereign nation starts accepting Bitcoin as a national currency. So, a few months into the experiment, how's it going? On today's show, our deputy editor for Latin America, Santiago Perez, will be here to discuss the latest on El Salvador's big bet on Bitcoin and the steps its president is taking to try and ensure its success. That's after these headlines. Activision Blizzard is facing a widening investigation by state and federal regulators into how its leadership handled workplace misconduct claims, including gender discrimination and sexual harassment. That's according to documents and people familiar with the probes. The increased scrutiny comes as Microsoft is working to complete a $75 billion deal to buy the gaming publisher, which is known for its World of Warcraft and Candy Crush franchises. We report the Securities and Exchange Commission subpoenaed Activision for more records than previously sought on the day the planned acquisition was announced, and a California state watchdog agency subpoenaed Activision's directors and the LA Police Department for records related to CEO Bobby Kotick and 18 other former and current employees. Activision has disputed the allegations and called the subpoena for police records a, quote, extraordinary fishing expedition, but it declined to comment on the subpoena to Activision's directors. The company has said it's cooperating with the SEC probe. Tesla told a federal judge that the Securities and Exchange Commission is harassing its CEO Elon Musk over a settlement related to how Musk uses social media. In 2018, the electric vehicle maker and the SEC reached an unusual deal where the company agreed to have certain tweets by Musk pre-approved by a company lawyer. Earlier this month, Tesla said it received a subpoena from the SEC related to its compliance with that deal. And attorneys for Tesla said yesterday the agency is conducting unfounded investigations of Musk and the company. This isn't the first time the two sides have clashed over the settlement. Our reporter Dave Michael says it's an example of how tricky it can be for the SEC to get creative with enforcement.
The SEC is always under some pressure to do more than just fine companies and individuals. You know, the public probably isn't always comfortable with the idea that the SEC, which is a civil regulatory agency, punishes by demanding, you know, basically fines. And the SEC is under pressure to come up with other ways to create accountability. And sometimes that's really hard to do given the facts and circumstances of a case. So the lesson here probably is getting creative can be worth it, but it also can create a lot of complexity and difficulty. And you would imagine that the SEC would be pretty judicious in the future about doing it.
Tesla's lawyers also said the SEC hadn't distributed $40 million in fine money to shareholders that were allegedly hurt by Musk's tweets. The SEC didn't respond to a request for comment. Amazon and Visa say they've resolved a months-long dispute over payments. In November, Amazon said it would soon stop accepting UK-issued Visa credit cards, citing their higher fees. But yesterday, the company said they'd reached a deal that would allow Visa cards to continue to be accepted across Amazon websites and shops around the world. Amazon also agreed to drop surcharges it had put on Visa credit card purchases in Singapore and Australia. A spokesman for Visa said the two companies would also work together on product and technology initiatives related to payments. And speaking of Amazon, an activist investor says the e-commerce giant is undervalued by about $1 trillion. We report exclusively that Daniel Loeb, CEO of the hedge fund Third Point, which has a large stake in Amazon, told investors on a call Wednesday that the market is failing to recognize the full value of Amazon's businesses. While Loeb hasn't pursued an activist campaign at Amazon, our markets reporter Caitlin Ostroff says he has a history of splitting companies into units that can stand on their own.
So he's already thinking about Amazon in two parts, one being the business focused on cloud services, AWS, and the other on kind of more of the retail shipping and distribution side. And it's a sign that he might be thinking of that as a way to segment the two companies. And that honestly could address some of the concerns that lawmakers have had over Amazon's size.
You can hear more from Caitlin in yesterday's AM edition of our sister podcast, What's News? And ever wonder how your passenger rating on Uber is worked out? Well, now the ride-hailing company is providing a breakdown of how drivers rated passengers, including how many glowing 5-star or embarrassing 1-star and middle-of-the-road ratings they've received. Previously, passengers could only see their average score. Our personal tech reporter, Dalvin Brown, has more on Uber's reasoning for the update.
So Uber says that this is all in the name of privacy and transparency, and that if you know more about how the company is collecting those ratings, you are just a more informed rider overall. You know how your experience within the Uber impacts your overall rider ratings, and then in turn, maybe you're a bit more respectful or thoughtful the next time you enter an Uber. Maybe you remember to put on your seatbelt so that you don't get your score docked.
If you want to see your rating summary, open up the app, click on Settings, then Privacy, and head over to the new Privacy Center. There you'll be able to scroll and select to see a summary of your passenger rating. All right, coming up, take a sovereign nation, a decentralized currency, and a lot of international attention, and what do you get? We'll discuss after the break.
Private equity is a $4 trillion industry. I'm Wena Brown, host of the EY Next Wave Private Equity Podcast, where we explore how PE is creating value for all of its stakeholders across the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Last September, the Central American nation of El Salvador began an experiment that's been closely watched by crypto enthusiasts and skeptics. Prompted by its president, Nayib Bukele, El Salvador started accepting Bitcoin as legal currency in addition to the US dollar. But a few months on, it's clear that for many residents, cash is still king. Many who signed up for the country's digital wallet, El Chivo, simply cashed out the $30 in Bitcoin they were given as an incentive. And some say Bitcoin's volatility and the tech requirements are too much for El Salvador's mostly informal economy. So how does the country and its president plan to push forward? Here to talk about that is Santiago Perez. He's the WSJ's deputy editor for Latin America, and he's been following the situation. Hi, Santiago.
Hi, Soy.
I want to talk about Bukele a little bit because he's not what you might picture when you think of a president. Can you describe what he's like and how this fits with his efforts to promote Bitcoin?
Right. He's not a typical president to start because he's very young and he's very hip. And as a millennial, he tries to, and I think he succeeded to change the narrative about El Salvador. In the past, everything was about, like, you know, the violence, gangs. He's changed the narrative, and now people are talking about El Salvador and the experiment that Mr. Bukele is leading. So he's promoting this idea of trying to transform a country that's really poor and small, a small economy, into a modern version of something that could be like Latin America's Singapore. So he was a marketing executive. He also managed nightclubs. So he's a good communicator. And that's part of the promotion and also has to do with the adoption of Bitcoin in order to give a perception that El Salvador is adopting new trends.
Along with, you know, getting its citizens to use Bitcoin in everyday transactions, Bukele sees Bitcoin as a way to help the country borrow. How would that work?
Well, we need to take into account that El Salvador is highly indebted. And because it adopted the dollar 2 decades ago, it cannot print its own money to fund public spending. And Mr. Bukele has also been very popular because his policies and his fiscal policy has been quite expansive. So he's facing now a deeper budget deficit. So he needs to borrow abroad. And the problem is that the country is facing rising financing costs because there's a perception of increased risk when it comes to a possible default of sovereign debt. So they came up with this innovative idea, which is to issue debt tied to the value of Bitcoin. So he's planning to issue about $1 billion in bonds, and half of it would be used to buy Bitcoin. After 5 years, the government will start selling those holdings, assuming that the value will increase over time. So the idea would be to divide that upside, or to share that upside or that increased value with bondholders. The other half will be used to develop the infrastructure needed for a new city that's near a volcano that could be used to mine Bitcoin using the thermal energy from the volcano, which is a plan that we still need to see the specifics about the development. But essentially, the government wants to create a tax-free zone for entrepreneurs who can come and develop plans linked to Bitcoin. So they hope to attract a lot of investment there.
Okay, so they want to spend money in part on a city that, among other things, could use energy from a volcano to produce more Bitcoin. That sounds a little weird. How tricky is it expected to be to get investors on board with this kind of bond?
Well, it seems that they will be able to sell it. You have a large community of Bitcoin investors who could be attracted to it. It's the first time that we'll see that type of offering, so that's also very innovative. I think U.S. investors won't be able to buy the bond directly, so they may need to go through offshore vehicles. So the bond is interesting because it's backed with Bitcoin, and it's not really seen as a bond that tracks the economic fundamentals of El Salvador. So because of its novelty, especially among Bitcoin investors, some financial executives are calling it a meme bond. On the other hand, it could be a bit risky because having Bitcoin as collateral could be quite dangerous, considering that the value of Bitcoin is quite volatile.
I imagine another risk would be that typically bonds are structured under U.S. or Luxembourg laws, and that this one probably couldn't be.
Exactly. And we need to see what type of legislation El Salvador will pass. And this is very important because El Salvador has issued a lot of bonds under New York or under laws in Luxembourg. So we need to see if there will be a problem when it comes to repaying that debt and who will get the priority when it comes to paying those obligations, and also in the case of default. Those bonds last year performed pretty bad, in part because of a perception that El Salvador's finances are weakening because of higher spending, a deeper budget gap, high indebtedness. So these are all factors that are like, you know, pressuring Mr. Bukele in a way.
Apart from this debt offering, do we know what else El Salvador plans to do moving forward with Bitcoin?
Well, they say that if this bond placement is successful, they're hoping to raise in total like some $5 billion. So that's quite relevant. So far, we haven't seen significant inflows or foreign investment related to the adoption of Bitcoin, but it's too soon to tell. I think we need to see how this experiment will develop over the next few years. What matters a lot is that El Salvador has important debt payments to make in coming years. So we need to see whether they will have enough dollars to meet those commitments.
All right, that's WSJ Deputy Editor for Latin America, Santiago Perez. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Santiago.
Sure, Zoe. Thank you.
And that's it for this week. We'll be off on Monday for President's Day, but join us again Tuesday for a new episode of Tech News Briefing. Our producer is Julie Chang. Our supervising producer is Chris Zinsley. Our executive producer is Kateri Yoakum. And I'm your host, Zoe Thomas. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.
Thank you for your interest in the WSJ podcasts from the Wall Street Journal. We're always looking to improve, and we're interested in hearing your opinions. Please go to wsj.com/survey and take a survey that will help us bring you more of the content you're looking for. Thank you for your time and support.